I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Of course you are. Thank you for being here with me. I can feel you all. And it feels good that we're all joining together to talk about my favorite subject, food. And sometimes it's a happy story. Sometimes it's a not so happy story. Sometimes it's a delicious story. Interesting all the time, I think, anyway. And one of the things that I'm so excited about is we've been transcribing all of these shows, and I am so grateful for the volunteers who have been doing these transcriptions. And what's fun is I've been learning things from them as well as them learning from the programs. It's been a real give and take and give all around. But the great news is that we are totally current with 2013. We are almost all finished with 2012 interviews, and we'll go back for the few years before that. And it'll all be there for you for free at responsibleeatingandliving.com to listen to or read your choice. Lots of wonderful information there. And thank you for supporting it and listening. And what else can I tell you about responsibleeatingandliving.com? That's my nonprofit. And from time to time, I go and I try and make the website a little bit easier to navigate. And you might go to the It's All About Food tab. You can see what guests are coming up. You can see everyone that's been on the show, a guest interview index in alphabetical order by first name. And then all the archives from 2013, 2012, 2011, 2009, 2010. Lots of good things there. Now, let's get to the delicious part of the program, please. We are going to be speaking with someone who's already been on the show, and I'm looking forward to having her back. Lori Sadowski is the author of Allergy-Free Cook Bakes Cakes and Cookies. She's the author of the Allergy-Free Cook Bake Spreads, an active food writer with 2 degrees in music education and musicology, and a certified personal trainer specialist and nutrition and wellness specialist. Welcome to It's All About Food, Lori.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I am pretty good, thanks. How are you?
Good. So I'm looking forward to speaking with you in the next 30 minutes or so. And there's a lot of good things to talk about. But first, let's talk about that evil wheat a little bit. I've read so many different things about wheat, and there's more and more information about wheat in the news and in magazines and in medical journals because so many people are having issues with wheat. But some of the things that have been surprising me are how much wheat we've actually eaten. There were times, I think in the early 19th century here in the United States, where a lot of people got about 30% of their calories from bread.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And then also somebody was connecting the dots recently where because of global warming, if you want to call it that, there are all kinds of weather issues that are affecting wheat crops. And you have people in Egypt, for example, many of them who still eat 30% of their calories from wheat.
Yeah.
And they were connecting the dots, saying that maybe some of the turmoil in the Middle East is due to these people who are starving because the cost of wheat has gone up because of global warming and droughts, and they spend like 35% of their income is on food. So yeah, there's all kinds of interesting stories connected with wheat.
Yeah, it definitely has a big connection across the board, not just with celiac disease or special diets.
But the amazing, it just boggles my mind because so many people have lived on it and so much of it, and now it's becoming problematic.
Right.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that like a big issue with it becoming more of an issue is that with the with like genetically modified crops and things like that, and in an area where we do rely on a lot of wheat consumption in general because it might be cheaper or, you know, other grains aren't as, I don't even want to use the word popular, but I mean, in the last year, we've obviously heard a lot more about, say, quinoa, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Quinoa is a very popular grain. But, I mean, it's definitely much cheaper to rely on something like corn or wheat and then when they're genetically modified crops. We're just eating too much of them because they're often put in other ingredients or other products as well. You can see corn as a filler in everything,
right. Everything
from, you know, candy to a loaf of bread that should be maybe even whole wheat. So it's everywhere and it's cheap. So that's why it's in everything.
Yeah, it's artificially cheap. It may not really be cheap, but we see it as cheap because
right,
the
course.
Government supports those crops. And you're probably familiar, there's this one book that's been on the bestseller list for a while now, Wheat Belly.
Yes, I am familiar with it.
And I had interviewed Dr. Davis on this show, and there were parts of the book that I liked a lot and parts I didn't like at all. but he did bring up some interesting things about the history of wheat. I personally didn't care for what he promoted as a diet, and I also don't believe that you can lose dramatic amounts of weight just by eliminating wheat from your diet. That was kind of a big, lofty claim. But very interesting about the history and how wheat has been developed over thousands of years.
Right, yeah. I know, similarly, I know a lot of people who follow a paleo type of diet where even if, I mean, personally, I'm a vegan, but even...
Yay!
Their points, though, on wheat consumption, I think are good points. I'm not saying that everyone needs to give up wheat or exactly what you said in the way of, it's certainly not as a weight loss diet, but if people eat, it's just like we wouldn't just eat apples all day, you know, like we have to vary how much we're eating. We wouldn't eat 30% of our diet of apples, just like we shouldn't eat 30% of our diet of one single grain.
Yeah. I think a lot of people attribute weight loss sometimes to a particular diet, but most of it is just when they're trying to follow a diet, for example, just the fact that they're concentrating on what they're eating, all of a sudden when they're paying attention, they can lose weight just because they're making some sensible choices because they're thinking about what they're eating.
Yes, I agree with that very much. I think that when people say might go on a low-carb diet, I think that gluten-free often gets confused with the words low-carb because they think that they're just cutting out grains, which, I mean, a grain-free diet perhaps, but not wheat or gluten-free because there's so many other grains, even if they're, you know, what they refer to as pseudo-grains like quinoa or millet or something like that, there's still these higher carbohydrate ingredients that people should be including in their diet. But when but people are often also saying, well, if I feel much better because I cut out bread and pasta and I'm gluten-free, but they also might not be looking at the amount of grains that they're eating that are hidden, or they might have chose to go on a low-carb diet, therefore lost weight because they're not eating, they're eliminating a full food group.
Yep. People really don't know what's in their food unless they're really, really paying attention. And sometimes it takes a lot of attention. Even if you're reading ingredients, you may not be sure where they come from or what they might be cross-contaminated with. It gets really complicated.
Yeah, it can certainly be exhausting.
Yeah. Okay. So that's wheat. Before we get into your new book, we'll get to that soon enough. I wanted to mention that I have your old book about baking bread, and it's not that old. What did it come out a year ago?
Yeah, about a year ago, a little bit more than a year.
Yeah, so I hadn't used it very much when we had talked about it, and I've got probably a gazillion cookbooks, mostly because I talk to a lot of cookbook authors on this show.
Right.
And I don't really get to know many cookbooks very well, and I also just like to make up stuff in the kitchen. But, you know, occasionally something leads me to a book or I want to compare notes with a bunch of different cookbooks. And anyway, short story long, I got into your bread baking book and it is excellent.
Thank you.
Really. So I've been looking in different gluten-free baking books and I want to give you an A+.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, to start with, that book and this new one are relatively light and thin, but they're not light and thin on information.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much, seriously.
Now, I have to share one of the secret ingredients in some of your recipes, and it's like 2 tablespoons of ground almonds does amazing things to the flavor of pizza crust or bread rolls. Amazing.
Well, I appreciate you hunting down those secrets. But they do. They add a nice, pleasant flavor and some nice texture as well. Without having to use too much, you can easily grind that yourself. You know, you don't have to buy a bag of almond flour or something. So I try to make the recipes as accessible as possible to everyone.
Well, I'm okay. A lot of people tell me they can't be like me, and I'm thinking, why not? But I like to spend time in the kitchen, and I haven't started grinding my own grains yet, but I like to make a lot of things from as whole or from the essential ingredients as possible. And so one of the things I have is a coffee bean grinder that I use regularly for flax seeds, occasionally for spices, and to grind those 2 tablespoons of almonds whenever I'm making one of your recipes. And I think it's important because nuts and seeds, for example, can go rancid very quickly.
Right, that's very true. A lot of people don't know that, especially even with gluten-free flours, that a lot of them should be stored in the fridge or the freezer if you don't have the room in the fridge. But, that can all, especially when they're already ground, that's a big, big thing to know.
Yeah, so I don't want to buy almond meal.
Right.
And I want to make it up quick, and it's really not that difficult to do that. And I've made the pizza crust, and I've used Miyoko Shinner's recipe for almond mozzarella cheese.
Oh, yeah, she has some pretty amazing recipes in that book.
And it's amazing with a homemade delicious tomato sauce. It's pizza.
Yes.
That
for sure.
Pizza crust tastes like real pizza crust.
Thank you.
Yeah, anyway.
No, so, I really appreciate it. It's really, really kind of you.
But I'm very excited about it because I'm sincere. This is really good stuff. Now, let's just talk a minute about what's available in the stores today. There are so many products now for people that have gluten intolerance. I remember when I was young in the days of Betty Crocker and Duncan Hine mixes, I never understood why anyone would want to buy a mix, okay? That's just me. But if you read the ingredients on a mix, what is it? It's flour.
Pretty basic.
I mean, it's basic. It's flour. It's baking powder, sugar. I mean, not much else.
Yeah, usually that's it. Maybe a pinch of salt, and then just gives you the guidelines of what to add. It's pretty brainless.
And you can't do that yourself. I mean, I just don't get it. Okay, that's just me. But then you add another level of complexity when it's gluten-free.
Right, yes, of course.
But there are still gluten-free mixes out there, and I've tried a few, and for my palate, they're usually too sweet if they have the sweetener in them. They're gummy. They're not very good.
I think it's because they're sort of like a one-size-fits-all type of thing, right? So if it's a company that's making a lot of, and this doesn't go for all of them, I certainly haven't tried all of them. I'm sure that there's ones that are very good.
Mm-hmm.
They can't use, they shouldn't use the exact same flour mix for every single item. So if there's a company that makes, say, bread and cakes and muffins, and they're using the same combination of flours or single flour for their recipes, that's why they all sort of taste the same, because there's no way that that the same ratio of ingredients as well as exact same flour mixture is going to work for, say, a yeast bread. Like in my first book, you won't see the exact same ingredients in the yeast bread as you would in a cake in a second book. And in the third book, when it comes out, same with pie crust. They all have different combinations and ratios, which are what make them what they are. But many cake mixes and stuff like that either don't have a proper combination, a proper ratio, or some of them, like the Betty Crocker one, for example, I'm pretty sure it's just rice flour and potato starch, or it's rice flour and a starch, but I don't even know how that can mimic wheat,
okay,
that combination.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Okay, so when you make a wheat-based cake, like I said before, it's wheat flour, a baking powder, sugar, a little salt, a liquid. It could be water or milk. And then maybe whatever flavorings, vanilla. You might want a binder because in vegan baking, we're not using eggs. And a lot of us have gotten accustomed to using flaxseed and water mixture,
right,
maybe
yeah.
banana, applesauce. Okay. Gluten-free baking. That's where you come in.
I hope so.
You know, I don't know what your refrigerator looks like, but on my top shelf, I have 15 large jars. They're five in a row, three jars deep. What are they? They're probably like, I don't know how, they're not half gallon. Maybe they're 2 quarts. And each of them has a different powder. All-purpose gluten-free, garbanzo beans, sorghum flour, brown rice flour, tapioca starch potato flour, buckwheat flour, and so on.
You're like your own personal grocery store in there. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I like to have backups in the freezer.
Yes, I hear you. I have lots of that.
Because with gluten-free baking, you know, the stores are getting better with supplying them, but they don't always have what you want.
And that's true, too. I know that I always get people contacting me and asking me where they can buy things or where it's cheaper to buy things or if it's safe to buy things, say, in bulk. And, I mean, as a Canadian, sometimes it's hard for me to make recommendations if someone lives in, say, the States in a very small town or city. So but in the States, you guys can pretty easily order off Amazon.com,
mm-hmm.
which sounds like a plug for them, but it's really not because I wish that they'd ship to Canada, but they have amazing things that you guys can order, and that's usually a pretty easy way for people to get a hold of it. But if you're out of something and you're about to start baking, you know, you definitely want to be able to hop down to the store and get whatever you need, like whether it's sorghum flour or, you know, coconut oil or what, something easily accessible. But it can certainly, you know, you certainly have quite a large supply once you get them all in your arsenal.
But it's really not a scary thing, especially when you have a book like this to go through. So there may be 3, 4, or 5 extra ingredients.
Right, yeah.
But I just say get over it, get your hands into it, and make some really great food.
One thing I definitely try to do in the book is, and in all the books actually, is to not use too many flours. I mean, I sort of just stick to about 5 or 6 of them as a whole, as opposed to, you know, the over like 22 or so gluten-free flours that are available.
Mm-hmm.
I don't rely on, for example, in my first book, coconut flour was not really anything. No one really knew what coconut flour was when I was writing my first book. It was very hard to find and very expensive. Now it's a heck of a lot more popular. But I also know that if people are buying my first book and they're used to the flours that I sort of like to use the most, they're probably going to want those in the second book too. So I try to keep consistent with, for example, I really love sorghum flour, and sorghum flour plays a leading role in most of my recipes.
I love it too.
And you know what? It has a great taste. It's not too expensive
mm-hmm.
compared to a lot of the other gluten-free flours, and it's good for you. You know, it's full of fiber and B vitamins, and I really like that. It has a bit of natural sweetness, and it's high in fiber. Like, it's an all-around really good flour to have, and it's pretty easy to find. And if not, again, you can usually order it in. But now I'm seeing it quite often. I didn't see it that much when I started using it, and then now it's pretty much anywhere I go. It might be because everywhere I go, I say, you have to stock yourself sorghum flour. But either way, I do see it a lot more easily now, and it is a very good flour to have on hand.
I think it used to be a lot more popular decades ago, but somehow we just based ourselves on wheat, good old
yes.
wheat.
Yes, well, and that's true, too. I see a lot of very old recipes
mm-hmm.
using like sorghum grain, which
right.
I haven't even seen in person. I know that there's some companies that sell it, but again, maybe if I could visit, be near like a Whole Foods in the U.S. or something, they might have it. But I agree with you. Same with sorghum syrup. Sorghum syrup was often used instead of things like molasses in a lot of old recipes, but I don't think I've ever seen sorghum syrup on a grocery shelf.
Yeah, I haven't. Interesting. Okay, now, so aside from the basics that go into a cake, let's say, we have sorghum flour and some starches. Can you talk about what those starches are and why they're included?
I do include some starches. I try not to include too many because I want to keep the nutrition factor as well, but I do add a bit to lighten it up to give you that cake flavor or cake texture. I certainly want to make sure it tastes like cake and not like something dense and too healthy. Starches sort of play a double role in gluten-free vegan baking, and in addition to what I mentioned about lightening it up and adding the correct texture, it also helps with binding in because you're lacking what you mentioned before, you're lacking the eggs because of vegan taking the eggs out or an egg allergy. So just like, you know, when you're making pudding or something like that and you use corn or tapioca starch to thicken it, it does the same type of thing when you're baking, and then you can omit those eggs and without worrying about it crumbling as you, as you bite into it, and you don't always have to rely on something like flaxseed or something like that to keep it together. And it also gives a nice texture. Tapioca flour has a bit of a chew to it, so it's nice in things that you want that stickiness, like in something like a cookie that's a little chewy on the inside. Tapioca flour does well for that.
What's really crazy these days, and I think it's more so than before, although I don't know that we have any proof of it, is there are more allergies out there everybody's talking about, and you cannot please everyone, it seems like, because people have wheat allergies, soy allergies, egg allergies, dairy allergies, or they have ethical issues to eggs and dairy. And some people have nightshade allergies, tomatoes and potatoes and corn allergies and legume allergies. Some people can't eat some beans, and then some people can't eat some nuts. It's really crazy.
Yeah, there's quite a spectrum. I often hear from people who are talking to me about various reasons why they are gluten-free, and I always hear nightshades for things like arthritis or fibromyalgia or anything related to that type of joint pain. And they always say that the two biggest things that helped them were gluten and removing gluten and nightshades. For these type of reasons, I don't include nightshades in my book. So I don't use like potato flour or potato starch, and I don't also use any legume flours like chickpea flour or fava bean flour or garfava flour. There are some in my first book, but not really in the second, or not at all in the second book, for the reason of legume allergies. There is in some recipes do call for like earth balance, you know, for that buttery flavor, because sometimes you need that buttery flavor. And that does have pea protein in it way down the line in the list of ingredients. But for people who are sensitive to these other things, I'm sensitive to knowing that. And I try to make sure that my recipes are accessible as possible without having to rely on such a mishmash of flours where they might not be able to, or they'd have to end up substituting a lot, which then they may not be successful with because of the different weights. And, you know, I just want everyone to be able to enjoy them. So it's my biggest goal there. And I like how they taste, and I want people to like how they taste too.
That's very nice.
Thank you.
That's nice. Well, what's amazing to me is how many, from a kind of like a chemical background, I have a chemical engineering background, so some of this is like interesting to me, what you can substitute from one or another just from chemistry point of view. But when you touch corn starch or potato starch or arrowroot starch, they all have very similar qualities to them. You pretty much can intermix them without much trouble.
For the most part, corn, tapioca, and arrowroot primarily. Potatoes a little iffier. It's a little heavier in its weight, so it doesn't always work out the same. But I'd say that the two that are most similar are tapioca and arrowroot starch. They're a little gummier. Like if you were to make pudding or something like that, or thickening a sauce, either way, I find that those two almost have a gummier consistency,
right.
Whereas cornstarch has more of that, when it hardens, it's more like jello instead of, or gelatin, as opposed to the gummy stickiness that arrowroot and tapioca give. So I find that the easiest one to sub are those two. And then the other two are not quite as easy, but, I mean, workable for sure.
Now, you don't use rice flour?
No, there's no rice flour at all in that book.
And why do you not use rice flour?
I don't use rice flour for a few reasons. I don't like the taste of it. I think that it has a very distinct taste to it, and I can taste it when I eat other products or if I'm somewhere that bakes with it. I think that the texture itself, so like that's more like flavor, but I also think the texture is not much to be desired. And, it just sort of lacks nutrition. Like it's compared to all the other ones, it just sort of falls short, and I would rather use something that has more nutrition and a little bit more wholesomeness to it, just like I wouldn't use all-purpose white flour if I wasn't celiac. I similarly am not going to use white rice flour because of that reason. And brown rice flour, again, it's a little heavier. It gives a bit of a denser consistency, and I just I don't think that compared to mixing the other flours together that it does quite as well and making something taste just like the real thing, which is my ultimate goal always. I don't want it to taste like a substitute or this is a pretty good cake for, you know, gluten-free or for vegan. I want it to taste exactly or better than you remember. And I don't think rice flour can do that job successfully.
Right. Well, semantic-wise, I don't want to say like the real thing. I think tasting like you remember and better is a better way to put it, because they're all real.
Right.
It's just
yes,
we've been socialized in some way to certain ingredients, and it's incredible. You know, we all think we have a certain degree of free choice, but so much of it is just what business has made available for us.
That's true as well, and you know, it's what we're accustomed to when we're growing up. And I think that I suppose then tasting like I remember things is a much better way to put it. Because if I think of, say, you know, my grandmother's pierogi from when I was a child, the real thing certainly doesn't taste like what she would make was the real thing to me, but what you buy in the grocery store was certainly not tasting like the real thing. And those are both made with wheat. So, you know, my goal, I guess, is always tasting like you remember or even better. Maybe, yeah, actually, just even better.
Okay, now, little silly question. The picture of the woman on the cover.
I get that a lot.
Is that you?
No, it's not. A lot of people ask me when they see me in real life, they're like, oh.
You don't look like the person in the picture. Who is that?
You know what? She's just the face of the allergy-free cook. She does the job for me.
Okay. Well, all right. I just had to know that. And I don't know, we have about a minute or two left, but I wanted to comment that in the beginning of the book, you really go all out explaining so many different things. If people want to substitute oil for butter or margarine, or substituting or how different flours will work, and there's really a lot of research that went in here.
I definitely try to make it really accessible to everyone. So if, for example, you have an intolerance to another flour, or you just really don't have access to it, like I have a friend who lives in the UK that can't find sorghum flour for the life of her.
Mm.
So, you know, and those using those tips, she's been able to make, you know, more than 25 recipes from both books combined because of what she knows would sub well using those ingredients. So that's why I try to do it. Just, I mean, obviously everything is, you know, is the ultimate to be made as written, but it also makes it much more accessible to have a very close version if you don't have access to everything or can't have it from an allergy or whatever reason.
Well, thank you.
Thank you,
Lori Sadowski, for this book, The Allergy-Free Cook Bakes Cakes and Cookies. It's really a good one. And I can't wait to dig in and start making some of these recipes because they look really great.
I'm excited to hear how it goes.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining me, and it's all about food. And have a very sweet day and a sweet year, and good luck with this book.
Thank you so much.
Okay, I'm Karen Hartgloss, and you know, this is It's All About Food, and we will be back in a few minutes, and we're going to be talking about vegetarian boxing with Omawale Whale Adwell. We'll be right back. Everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass, and we're back for the second part of It's All About Food here on March 12th, 2013. And let's see, I wanted to remind you of a few things. You know, you can send me an email anytime during the show if you want to ask a question, or anytime during the week, info@realmeals.org. How easy is that? info@realmeals.org. And I love, love, love to hear from you. I really do. It makes my day. So you could make me happy and send me a little message. That would be fun. And I'll write back to you. And also, I wanted to let you know I'm going to be speaking around, and I wanted to let you know what some of those engagements are. So March 24th here in Manhattan, we have a Veggie Pride Parade 2013. It's going to culminate after the parade at the north end of Union Square Park. I spoke there last year, and I will be very happy to be back this year. It's usually in May, but this year it's in March, and let's hope March goes out like a lamb, and we have some very lovely mild weather there on March 24th. More information on that at veggieprideparade.org. And then I'll be in California in April, speaking at the Berkeley Vegan Earth Day. Now, you may know this or not, but my birthday is on Earth Day, April 22nd. But Berkeley Vegan Earth Day is April 20th, 2013, at the David Brower Center in Berkeley, California. That's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm going to be joined by some other wonderful speakers like Gene Barr and Will Tuttle. Information at berkeleyveganearthday.com. And then later in April, I'll be in Miami at the Earth Save Miami Vegan Potluck. And that'll be in the at the Coral Gables Congregational Church. And more information at earthsavemiami.org. Or you can just go to responsibleeatingandliving.com, my website, and click on the Talks tab. And if you have an event and you might want to have me come and speak, well, send me an email at info@realmeals.org, okay? Okay, so that's the events coming up, and I'm really looking forward to that. We have another guest who's going to be on the show shortly. I know he's here in the studio, and I'm just waiting for him to come back in the room and join me. But it's going to be very interesting because we're going to be talking about vegetarian boxing. He's a champion vegetarian boxer. And I know one of the things that really floors people when we talk about eating a diet based on plants is people really have a hard time believing you can have athletic endurance and build muscle on plant foods. And we have lots of different people today that are vegetarian or vegan and are super athletes, proving more and more that people can fuel themselves just as well and maybe better on plant foods. So I am going to bring on my next guest, and I just learned how to pronounce his name, which I wasn't pronouncing correctly before. It's Omawale Adwell, and we just call him Wally, right?
Well, it's Omawale Adwell.
You can put that headset on if okay. You like.
Sure,
then
sure.
You can hear yourself and look really good. You already look really good.
Wale is great.
Well, thanks for joining me. Omawale is a vegetarian champion boxer, boxing trainer and coach, and a personal fitness trainer. He's also the co-founder of GAME, G-A-M-E, an organization developed to address socioeconomic issues facing poor Black and Latino communities. So here we are, and thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Karen.
Now, you don't live here in New York? You're just here for the month?
I do live in New York.
Oh, okay.
I'm born and raised in Brooklyn.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Yes.
I thought you, for some reason, when I read your information on LinkedIn, it
right, made... Right, but regarding the tour that was going all over the place, right?
Okay, tell me about the tour.
Okay, well, the tour is really designed, just like you were explaining to your listeners, really to show people that you actually can be strong and very fit and athletically, inclined and skilled, being a vegetarian or vegan, especially. When I train, I'm a personal trainer as well, as you mentioned, and I always give vegan tips. I'm vegetarian myself. I give vegan tips, vegan options to everyone, every one of my clients. And the tour is really designed to kind of show people demonstrations in boxing from someone who is a vegetarian, and at the same time, you know, give them an opportunity to basically, you know, go through kind of the steps that a boxer might do, some of the ab work, some of the routines, learn some of the punches, you know, have a little fun with it. But the importance is to really show if people are looking to, say, detox because they want to weight manage. It's a lot of people who want to gain weight. And so
right. When
they see vegans, right, hear someone's vegan or vegetarian, they automatically think, okay, well, this person's going to be thin. And a lot of vegans are thin because they want to. A lot of vegans are aware of where you get your proteins. Obviously, you know, chia seeds, edamame, these are all legumes that are high, very high in protein. There's no other meat that you can get that's going to actually rival chia seeds, hemp, edamame. There's a top 10, and edamame was way at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So, and second place was cheese. So meat wasn't even
right.
in the top two, right?
So how did you get into your diet? Were you raised this way, or is it something you decided for being an athlete?
No, I got a little lucky. I had a conversation with my brother, who's actually he's not vegan or vegetarian, when I was 15. I'm 34 now, and immediately I became vegetarian. I chose my mother's birthday in August, and I became vegetarian.
What did he tell you?
Well, I was in Florida by myself, away from the family, going to high school. And he was, you know, we just got into a discussion in terms of things that I was eating, you know, how important it you know, would be. Although he was, mm-hmm. you know, never become a vegetarian, you know, important it is to, you know, basically respect life. And in a lot of different ways that we come, you know, towards respecting life in terms of, you know, in animals. People say, you know, clean kills. Obviously, vegans, you know, don't believe in any kind of clean kill of animals. And, you know, I said, you know, I'm going to go vegetarian. So I went vegetarian cold turkey. Excuse
I
the
love
pun.
That expression, yeah.
And, you know, I'm 15 at the time. And I didn't have that many options. You know, obviously you have to be a little skilled, you know, and this is comes, you know, in terms of, so it, you know, I would like to segue a little bit, let me know if I'm off course, in terms of just food access, you know, because I really didn't have the knowledge
mm-hmm.
in terms of food, what foods I can get to enrich my particular type of nutritional plan. So at the time I was, you know, eating rice, you know, greens and cornbread on a regular basis, you know,
right.
You said hemp and edamame, and I said, what is that? What lentils? There's various kinds of lentils. I didn't know, you know, what to get, you know, so it was just, you know, black beans, you know, things out of the can, you know, so my diet was all off. And, you know, I think we call that a lot of times, what would you call that? Junk food vegetarianism.
Well, rice and cornbread isn't really that junk food like junk food people are eating today with
right.
potato chips and cheese doodles, but it's pretty high starch.
Right, but that was pretty much what my that's what my diet consisted of, you know, on a consistent basis. You know, I said, you know, I don't want to have any meat. I'll, you know, eat this and that, and then it was
sure.
just a journey. It was a journey. So I was, you know, I went to about 3-4 doctors, and they told me I had high blood pressure.
Wow.
You know, this is while vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have to get to a much higher sense of, you know, a living, no matter what type of, dietary, you know, plan you have. So I noticed that, you know, I was eating foods that were high in sodium and not enough potassium. So as soon as I was introduced to juicing and I incorporated that into my diet, things changed. Phenomenal.
Yeah, well, I'm a big believer in juicing. I know it saved my life, literally. And people have different feelings about juicing.
Mm-hmm.
You've probably heard some of the should you juice or not juice.
Mm.
And I think it's a great thing. I don't know that it's absolutely necessary to juice, but if you have a particular goal that you want to achieve, whether it's a health crisis and you need to boost your immune system really fast, juicing is going to do it. If you want a fast boost of energy, it's the easiest thing to digest.
Right.
It goes right to you, just like, you know, people go for a caffeine fix. You go for a green juice fix.
Right.
You're going to feel that energy
exactly.
without the hangover afterwards that you're going to get from junk.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think also with juicing, a lot of people ask me in terms of, you know, they want to lose weight. You know, some people, I'm training some folks who want to lose weight and some folks who want to gain weight. And I add juicing into each one of those regimens. Hmm. So there might be differences in terms of, you know, when they incorporate other, you know, foods, you know, when they're juicing. But generally, you know, beets are excellent for, you know, basically just cleaning your system.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually have people eat, you know, juice a beet with some water and, you know, just maybe two greens, two or three greens, you know, some spinach, some chard, maybe some kale, you know, you could throw broccoli, you know, but two or three. And it's going to do wonders for the system because what beets does, it's going to flush your nutrients out as well.
Hmm.
It's going to flush nutrients. It's going to flush a lot of the nutrients that you do need. So you're going to need to actually try to retain some of the nutrients that you do have with juicing. And also do that just kind of, you know, just a clean slate. A lot of people do fasting or detoxing so they can get a clean slate. And so, you know, next time they start eating or whatever, you know, a lot of that is out of the system. And so you might do that once every 2-3 days. So I recommend that, you know, in terms of those who are trying to lose weight or gain weight.
Right. Tell me about this tour that you're doing.
Well, next stop, I'm going to be in the Bronx. I lived in the Bronx for 10 years. I lived in 4 or 5 boroughs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be at Hostos Community College.
Hostos, we know that.
Yes, 215.
When is that?
This is Saturday. I'm sorry, March 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
At 2:15, I'm gonna. You know, it's gonna be youth led. I have a young gentleman. He's 20 years old, and he's also a boxer, in great shape, and he wants to become a vegetarian.
Mm, great.
He's you know, making excellent strides, and he's also doing my boxing class today, and teaching young folks.
Oh, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's pretty serious with young people, especially in different neighborhoods, the poorer neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
I would say most people in America today know nothing about food and nutrition, and we're educated by commercials and little sound bites on the news, and it's all nonsense. And as a result, you know, a third of the population is obese.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's sick. We have heart disease and diabetes. These are food-borne illnesses that do not have to happen. So we have a serious crisis. But the people who are wealthy and mm-hmm. upper middle class, they have means.
Right.
They can hire a trainer. They can hire a consultant. They can do something about it.
Right.
It's their choice. But mm-hmm. the people that do not have means need help.
Right. Yeah. There's I forget which hospital is. I think it's Harlem Hospital that has McDonald's in it.
A lot of hospitals, please, have McDonald's. It's science fiction. It's ridiculous. It's comedy.
Right. And of course, in the worst way, too. So it's, you know, a lot of these areas, like Bronx is the poorest congressional district in the nation. And in terms of the 16th congressional district in the South Bronx specifically. you have, you can go into, say, 161st, where Yankee Stadium is, where the courthouses are, that particular location. You can't find natural foods. You can't find a health food store. I talk to people all the time. Even some of the folks who create these books and for vegans and vegetarians or anyone who's veg curious about where to go for vegetarian food tell you, you know, there wasn't much to put in the Bronx section.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not much, especially in that particular area. And it's always assumed that, you know, well, folks are not going to go. Folks are not going to go. And I think that's a huge problem. I think a lot of information, as you said, is kind of a disconnect between, you know, folks really getting food information. Just the fact that you have a lot of fast food in that particular area, McDonald's, Burger King, you name it, you know, diners, you know, everything galore in that particular area. I look at it as almost as an attack on that particular community. And there's something that has to be done. And I think a lot of these discussions that we do have around food, because it's this particular event that I'm going to be at March 23rd, it's the 11th annual. So you have folks that come in that are nutritionists. They've come in the past, and you know, there's farmers, and you know, help you with different information in terms of better access to food. But what we have to have is something that's consistent, a consistent discussion, mm-hmm. and dialogue, and that doesn't just leave and wait till next year or the next particular function. So what I'm doing, just like the young man that I'm working with and putting him under my wing, is trying to work with young people on a consistent basis, you know, really have more of a discussion, not just boxing. So even with this particular tour, you know, I'm trying to be accessible to folks, to, you know, just give them free information, free accessible information in terms of how can I get more protein into my diet. A lot of young people, some of the young men want to be boxers. You know, they say vegetarianism, being a vegan, will, you know, bring down their weight. Doesn't have to. You can still be very muscular, and to be able to do that, you can still get, you know, the right amount of carbs, right amount of nutrition, if you want to, and you just have to apply the same discipline you have with McDonald's. If you apply that same discipline, you're gonna look phenomenal, you know. And I think it's barrage when you know, in terms of the commercials that really attack the community. You see a lot of the billboards. You see, I mean, of course. Why not? Why not go there? You know, they must be okay. You know, FDA isn't saying anything, you know.
Yeah.
I see it on a regular basis, so it's a no-brainer. Why not go to McDonald's? You know, why not get potato chips at, you know, at the bodega? That's what's accessible. That's what I can eat, you know, right there. So what I'm trying to do is really have a consistent, you know, relationship. You know, more than just a dialogue, actually, and discussion, you know, with the young people, but also work with them on a regular basis. And I believe I bring boxing. What I do is with the tour and everything I do is boxing is really have been excellent, because boxing is not so accessible, but it's something that a lot of young people, and not just young boys, young girls as well, they want to box.
Mm.
They want to
mm-hmm.
box. They want to be able to defend themselves. They
mm-hmm.
want to be able to have fun. They want to get over their fear. They want to address bullying. They want to learn, you know, and I also encourage them to address the aggression that they have, which a lot of vegans may say, you know, come on with the, you know,
the diet.
The meat,
mm-hmm.
you
yeah.
know, their particular diet.
Mm-hmm.
Also, encourage that within their system, you know. So this is the kind of relationship, you know, that I'm trying to have, and not just going to speak in these different engagements. So after March 23rd, the next one will actually be in Texas on April 6th, and then after that, you know, I'll leave U.S. and go into Europe to Italy for 27. So it's more it's a spot tour. So I'll be going around the different festivals and speaking, and of course I'll be back in the U.S. in May 11th in New Orleans.
Wow, good for you. Now, do you make your own food, or do you go out and eat out?
I cook so much, it's it's ridiculous. And then I thought about it. It was one day, I think it had to be just a few days ago, maybe 2-3 days ago, I was in cooking, and I said, wow, this is why people complain about, you know, juicing because they got to clean up after. I said, listen, you know, if you want to be healthy, what are the most important things? What are the three important things, you know, to you? Would it be your children? Your children want to keep you around, right? You want to be able to stay around. You want to have better health. So therefore, this is a small sacrifice in terms of cleaning up, you know, after you juice. So people talk about that all the time. So I'm in my head, I'm saying, wait, okay, let me try to address them, you know, where they are, right? And say, okay, well, try to find this juicer. This juice is easier to clean. This one is easier to clean. You don't have to do much cleanup on that. And I think that you have to make things easier. As much as McDonald's makes things easier in terms of making it 99-cent menu, you know, I think we have to make it easier, you know, as well.
Well, this is a problem with our culture. It's a problem. Everybody has to have things easy.
Right.
And I'm not sure when this happened, when we got so soft. But... you know, no pain, no gain.
Right.
And
right.
I juice every day. And most of the time I make it. Sometimes I'm fortunate. My partner, Gary, will make it for me. But it's a commitment. It's a religion because I had advanced ovarian cancer 6 years ago, and I don't have it anymore. And I know that a piece of it has to do with juicing and cramming dark green vegetables.
Right.
That's my story. And I'm sticking to it. And I juice.
Right.
But what I say is, like what you said, you deserve it. I don't even think of it as a sacrifice. I think of it as a gift, a gift to me. I'm cleaning this juicer. It's not a problem. It just changed your perspective. This is a gift. This is doing wonderful things. Don't be so effing lazy.
Right. But we understand this. But the problem is we're up against, you know, heavy hitters.
No.
You know, billion-dollar budgets in marketing, you know. So I think, you know, at the same time, I do agree, and I feel like I go back and forth with some of those who have been working with me longer. I'm like, listen, just do it.
Just
do this and stick to it. Listen.
You know, some people don't have to juice.
Right.
You know, they could make a blended salad, which is a lot easier, and they can put their dark leafy green vegetables in. They can put their chia seeds in. It's easy. The cleanup's easy. You can take it with you. Okay.
Right.
You know, and that's fine, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Well.
So. But get into your kitchen. Get to know it.
Right.
And stop complaining.
Exactly.
If you want results, right?
Right. I think it's...
We have 1 minute, so.
Okay.
Make it. Wrap it up really nice.
Well, just the segue, because I know we were talking to young people, so I'm kind of going to veer off a little bit. A young man was murdered on March 10th, Kamani Gray. I don't know if folks, your viewers, your listeners, you know, were familiar. You know, police were in plain clothes, and they stopped him, and, you know, they shot at him 11 times. You know, they hit him 6 times. And... so, I mean, it's just, in my mind, it's kind of this dichotomy of the attack in terms of the poor access to food and poor food decisions that young people make, and then these issues in terms of, you know, stop and frisk, you know, or just, or what I would call it, you know, police and harassment, you know, or, you know, or police murder. So these two issues that are going on, and I really want to kind of leave with that and ask the people that, you know, attend March 23rd, so we can have more of a discussion in terms of food and our young people.
Okay. Thanks, Omawali. Wally, Adwali, thank you for joining me. And it's all about food, and it is all about food. It's all connected. Nutrition and well-being and crime and everything. It's all connected. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. And guess what? Have a delicious week, okay? Bye.